So as always, it is good to be with you today, but especially today, in which I particularly carry with me all of those days past that I have stood in this privileged place. I've told the story before about something I heard Marilyn Sewell say that so brilliantly resonated. Marilyn, up until just a few years ago, was the senior minister at our church in Portland. And if you don't know the Portland UU Church, it's a large and dynamic institution known for its intimacy in worship. In the last year of her ministry there, a documentary film was made illuminating her role there, opening a window to her life in ministry and the transition that she would be making. So when she was present then at this film viewing, at a Q&A afterwards, and was asked by someone in the audience, now that she's retired, does she preach? Her simple no startled some people in the audience. Yet she went on to elaborate and in so doing explain the role of preaching and ministry in the life of our faith. She described preaching as a sacral act. The truth is that it is relational, that it thrives upon the relationship between the congregation and the pastor. After hearing her explanation, I felt affirmed in my own understanding of the magnitude and responsibility of that relationship. Yes, it is a gift to be here today. And I remember another gift. This one I heard from Rob Eller Isaacs, who was then minister in Oakland, before he went on with his co-minister wife, Jan, to serve in Minneapolis. Actually, I didn't hear this directly. I think it was a third-hand thing. Rob Eller Isaac says a lot of things that get passed around. Well, you remember what Rob says. But he is rumored to have said that it takes a congregation a number of years to even begin to speak the same language as their minister. So how wonderful it is that we have been able to share in a certain level of mutual comprehension for quite a while now. And finally, stepping back further in memory, this third story that church consultant Roy Oswald tells has served as a guidepost to those of us doing ministry, full well knowing that someday we will leave that place where we have developed that sacral relationship and have become to communicate in the same tongue. He talks about his childhood as a young boy growing up in rural Saskatchewan. His two older brothers and he would often decide to walk home from school over the fields rather than going along the road. It was shorter, to be sure, but occasionally they would come upon enormous thistle patches. He says, I can't remember seeing anything like it since, but those thistle patches sometimes used to extend for half a mile or more. In places, this is up in Saskatchewan, so I'm sure up there they have way more thistles than we do. And he said the prisky patches would be 50 feet to 100 feet wide, and in other places 10 to 20 feet. The rest of the field lying fallow in summer was tilled soil. We rarely wore shoes, he says, to school in summertime, hence our dilemma, how to cross those thistle patches in bare feet. We did have the choice of walking around them, but since it was the end of the day, we were all tired and hungry. We were anxious to get home. There was a yummy snack waiting for the boys, and to walk around the patch would take them well out of their way. So they ran through the narrowest part full out. Ooh, ow, ooh, ow. Being the youngest, Roy had the least speed and the smallest leg span. He objected, he said, but he was always overruled by the older brothers who took him by a hand. He says, I can still vividly remember the experience running full speed across 20 feet of prickly thistles, yelping in pain all the way through. When the three of us reached the black soil on the other side, we would immediately hit the dirt and start pulling the few thistle ends that stuck in our feet. The conversation that they had centered on how many briars each boy got that they then yanked out of their feet. Many of you have received the letter in the mail this last week that informed you of my plans to bring this ministerial relationship to a close at the end of this church year in July. And some of you have been here for a long time, and this news is shocking. I'm glad you're here to breathe through this with me. Some of you are new, some even here today for the very first time, so this conversation may not make much sense or have much relevance unless you consider what many of us find here in Unitarian Universalism, that the growing of beloved community and the deepening of relationships are ways in which we live out our connection to the holy. It's how many of us make meaning. In talking about what it means to leave a congregation, one respected colleague said, "The power of community is enormous." And he said, "I have lived my entire life in its embrace. It is why I entered ministry. I believe the liberal church is worth devoting a life to." I'm that way too. A lifelong UU, like my colleague. I believe this is worth it too. Worth our time. I remember meeting with the Center for Career Development and Ministry in suburban Boston when I was in just the initial stages of preparing for ministry. I remember them asking what it was that drew me in. What called me, they asked. And at that place and time, all I knew how to answer was this big feeling I had deep in my gut. All I knew how to say in reply was community. It was community. It makes sense that the yearning to create liberal religious community would be so strong in Unitarian Universalism, ours being a covenantal faith where we feed off each other in healthy ways for growth and transformation to become our best selves, to make better the world that we adore, still loving the imperfections that fashion us, the unique individuals we are, that make the planet wholly and chaotically beautiful. And I have loved you in this way. I will admit, it's not been easy always to say this, maybe because of my own fear of intimacy, or because I want to say it truthfully, not as some frivolous form of flattery. And, like most ministries in the time I've been here, it's not always been one smooth, straight Nebraska highway. We've had our curves and plenty of hills and valleys. But isn't that what we heard in Ann Morrow Lindbergh's Intermittency? Each cycle of the tide is valid. Each cycle of the wave is valid. We've had difficulties, and yet we've managed to stay in relationship. And that's what healthy love is about, isn't it? I think so. Thank you. But also, the thing about love is expressing it can be difficult because it means that when the time comes to part, it might be really painful, like the thistles, right? It's impossible to get through them without pain. But the decision to go running full speed leaves a dear price to pay. Taking time to walk through the difficult emotions now is a benefit to this congregation as you come to build your relationship with the minister to follow me. And it will also benefit me and the congregation that I will come to serve. The whole experience benefits us all, makes us all healthier. So, if you are new here, do not fear. This will be a full and meaningful time in the life of the congregation. We'll be considering who we are, who we have been, and who we want to become. We'll be living out the meaningful ministries in the congregation and celebrating milestones, both the joys and the sorrows. I still have many Sundays in which to fill this pulpit, to speak that shared language, to tell you again of the self-same things I have told you before. You do remember, don't you, what they say, that ministers have only one sermon? That they do say that, and that is true, and that sermon will still be unfolding in these months to come. The closure of this relationship is actually something like a death. It is a death of the relationship we have had with each other. Minister to congregant, congregant to minister. And I know that might seem strong, but the relationship is coming to an end. It's natural to consider it in the language of grief and as a test of faith, mine and yours. The gift of amazing grace gets lifted up. As the wise theologian describes, grace strikes us when we are in great pain and restless. It strikes us when we walk through the dark valley of a meaningless and empty life. It strikes us when we feel that our separation is deeper than usual, because we have violated another life, a life which we have loved, or from which we were estranged. It strikes us when our disgust for our own being, our indifference, our weakness, our hostility, our lack of direction and composure have become intolerable to us. It strikes us when year after year after year, the longed-for perfection of life does not appear, but when the old compulsions reign within us as they have for decades, when despair destroys all joy and courage. Sometimes at that moment, a wave of light breaks into our darkness, and it is as though a voice were saying, "You are accepted. You are accepted by that which is greater than you and the name of which you do not know." In that moment, it is not meant for me to know, but to simply acknowledge this grace, to hear this powerful message that I say to you, you are accepted, you are loved, you matter. This matters through all the seasons. Our planting before we see the seeds come from the ground, then when we see the buds, the blossoms, the first fruits of our labors, then when that harvest comes and the ground is fallow again. It matters that we have planted, what we have harvested, and it matters that our relationship has transpired. Amen. Blessed be.